Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
1-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way, because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track Podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, I sit down with Jessica Carroll, and it's a delightful chat. We laugh a lot on this episode, and that's always a sign that we're having a nice time. Before we get on with that chat, just a few thank yous. So big thanks to Scroobius Pip and all my friends at the Distraction Pieces Network. Have you checked out the podcasts on the Distraction Pieces Network? I'll rattle off a few. There's an amazing one called Films to be Buried With, which is hosted by actor Brett Goldstein, actor-comedian Brett Goldstein. He's a mega superstar now. Brett's one of the stars of the multi-award-winning TV show Ted Lasso, where he plays the character Roy Kent. And Brett's podcast is incredible. He sits down with actors, musicians, comedians, all sorts, and talks, I guess, a similar structure to this, really, but about films. And it's lovely. I've been absolutely honoured to have been asked to go on there. So I've gone on there and chatted films. And as has other people that have that are on the Distraction Pieces Network, of course, the podfather himself, Scroobius Pip, has been on there. But yeah, go check that podcast out. And yeah, I mean, there's stacks over there. And so go have a little look and support the Distraction Pieces Network. I'd like to thank 76 for producing his podcast. He's produced his podcast from day one. And sometimes he's had to battle with, you know, Wi-Fi that might drop out on Zoom calls and things like that. But he's always kind of delivered a warm sounding pod chat for you. So thanks to 76. And I guess, as I'm not sure if this episode is going to come out at the end of 2021 or the beginning of 2022. Either way, I just want to extend my thanks to you lot for supporting this podcast throughout 2021 and 2020. As you know, I've said before that this podcast become a little bit of a creative lifeline for me during the days where we weren't allowed out. And it kept me connected with people. It kept me talking about the things that I love to talk about, which is people and music. And the fact that people listen and the fact that people, you know, drop me messages and follow me on the socials to find out about, you know, and subscribe to the podcast, all of them things, it makes it even better. So, yeah, so just a big thank you to you and for continuing to support this podcast. I think we are 350 episodes in there. Like, how did that happen? Still feels like it's only like a year old. It does to me anyway. Anyway, I digress. Get stuck into today's episode because it's a beautiful chat. Please enjoy Off the Beaten Track podcast with the wonderful Jessica Carroll. Sorry, I've interrupted the podcast, but with good reason. Hotel Chocolat are our sponsors. You know that now because I tell you about it every episode. But they've been super kind now. And you may have heard me talking about the products from the cacao bar. And there's gins, cream liqueurs, all sorts of wonderful chocolatey goodies. And what they've done is they've set a page up on the website that you can go to. And all you've got to do is, just for you Off the Beaten Track listeners, go over there, answer a question, and you could win the full range delivered to your front door. I mean, that's kind of them. All you have to do is go to this place, hotelchocolat.com/OTBT podcast. That's OTBT as in Off the Beaten Track podcast. hotelchocolat.com/OTBT podcast. go get your grubby little mitts on some deliciously chocolatey drinks, courtesy of our sponsors, Hotel Chocolat. I'll get back to the podcast. It's Off the Beaten Track Podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin. Okay, we are recording. Jess, how are you doing today?
Yeah, good, thanks, mate. I'm excited.
Are you?
Yeah, a bit nervous as well, because, I mean, you've had some epic guests on your show, so...
It's all just people talking records. As long as you're passionate about your songs, that's all that matters. So before we get into the song choices, we're recording this when is it? The 9th of December. And we're just about to sort of go into some sort of, I don't know what it is, whatever that buffoon's saying at number 10. I'm trying not to get political, but
it's hard not to.
I know, but there's some changes happening, and it seems to be sort of backward steps going. Hopefully, it won't end up back how it was, over the previous sort of 17, 18 months. But with that in mind, how did you find lockdown? What we touched upon before I press record is the fact that you're under your stairs in some kind of like little Anne Frank-esque studio. So obviously I presume that presented itself in lockdown, that kind of setup. So just talk me through how you found, the lockdown, both personally and professionally, or creatively, let's say.
Okay, yeah. It was every emotion I think you could imagine. As soon as lockdown was announced, those of us in the sort of post-production ADR voice world and also voice artists in general and actors, there was a massive panic, got to set up a home studio, go, go, go. And at the same time, we were dealing with all the stress that everyone else was dealing with. What's going on? What is this world that we're living in? There was a big panic to set this covered under the stairs studio up. And at the same time, the sort of leader of our ADR world, Jay, was in hospital in intensive care with COVID. Sure. So that first week was, there wasn't almost even time to think about Jay properly because it was, set everything up, keep everything going. I was helping lots of people set up their own home studios because I was set up very, very quickly, thanks to a neighbour with Amazon Prime who sorted me out with some equipment super quick. It was hard. And I think the main emotion that I felt through all of lockdown has been loneliness, actually, because I realised that my social life has mostly been work in the last sort of 10 years, really. I have the joy of being at a microphone with a sort of 10 people that I love most days in a studio with a bunch of great people running sessions. And suddenly we were like plonked into, some people were under beds with duvets over their heads. And one person trapped a nerve from sitting cross-legged on the floor for too long recording.
I shouldn't laugh.
I know you should. It's ridiculous. it was kind of bonkers, really. I just missed everyone a huge amount. And then sadly we lost Jay very soon into that first lockdown. And then of course we couldn't all be together. So that was really hard. I remember I was sort of trying to do a virtual, funeral. It wasn't really a funeral, but just sort of have a moment of us all be together and raise a glass to him. And it was just cruel, really. Yeah. I don't think I had any time in that first year at all to sit down and think about what on earth we'd been through because it was just nonstop. And I'm so proud of us all because, we kept all the film and TV that came out during lockdown, we were recording stuff for in our cupboards.
Yeah.
So, we did amazingly, really. But loneliness, I think.
Yeah, totally. And I think that was I've asked a lot of people that question, Jess, and it feels that ultimately it's that connection that everybody missed, how you take for granted that simple kind of pleasure of just being in a room with someone and saying, all right. And, as a podcaster, I'd never, interviewed anybody on a computer. I was like, what? No, you can't, won't work like that. You need to feel the kind of feeling in the room. You need to kind of be able to see like the body language and the first couple were quite strange. And it's, you know, I think where we had no choice and, you know, we was not just doing it for work, but it was as well as that, I guess, you know, quiz nights with the family and all of that stuff that that kind of meant that we had to sort of adapt. And yeah, and I definitely think I've mentioned this a few times previously that, you know, you go out for I like to run, and when you go out for a run, normally another runner will just give you this little kind of wave like you're in some kind of weird little gang. And and that continued through lockdown when you was allowed out for your exercise. But what was really mad was people, and where I live, like, you know, you don't speak to strangers. And but there was people on the other side of the road, like, walking their dogs, just kind of going, oh, morning.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, and you realise how starved we all were.
Desperate for interaction.
Yeah.
Desperate for it. I was actually interviewed for an article because I realised I had gone 6 months without a hug.
Shit.
6 months, no hug.
Wow.
I know. That's bonkers. Because I was sort of high risk-ish in the kind of low end of the high risk group. Thankfully, now not, but at the time I was. And so I was being very cautious. I'd actually had COVID back at the end of February, beginning of March, but we didn't know that's what it was at the time. Yeah. And yeah, just was living alone and yeah, working alone in my cupboard. So no hugs. And that first hug was, oh, euphoric.
Oh, well, that's a lovely place to kind of sort of tie up a, you know, a moment of that hopefully is going to be history now. And
yeah,
you know, we'll get the other side of Christmas and it'll be a positive place. Let's start your playlist, Jess.
This was so hard, Stu.
Good. It's meant to be hard. I want you to think about these things. And this is the one that everybody says is the hardest one. So I don't know if you agree, but for track one, I'm going to ask you, please, to tell me the song that you regard as having the greatest ever intro.
Well, I feel like lots of people before me chose ones that I also would have chosen.
Okay.
So I also realised in listening to a playlist this morning and just dancing like a loon around my room, Rhythm is a Dancer, Snap, has literally got the best intro, but I haven't chosen that. I have gone for Last Goodbye, Jeff Buckley, because that slide guitar at the beginning. I don't know what happened, but something happened at university where someone introduced me to Jeff Buckley, obviously not personally, musically. And I just felt like, wow, awoken in some way and got completely addicted. I remember watching, I had a video of his concert and I'd watch that on my tiny little TV in my university room. Completely addicted to him, fell head over heels in love and then was told that he was dead.
Yeah.
So thanks for that, Mike, out there. But that song is just, oof, it's everything.
It's really weird, right? And I'm not criticising your choice at all. But
please don't.
I'm never critical of music on here. But there's something about Jeff Buckley, right? I love that song, Last Goodbye. And I really love the track. It's not on Grace. Everybody... loves you. Is it Everybody Loves You? Everybody Here Loves You. Everybody Here Wants You.
Wants You, that's it.
Like, kind of, it's almost like an R&B track. And and it's beautiful. And his voice is beautiful. And obviously, he was a beautiful man. But I don't get the wow moment that all of my mates got, that you got, that heard Grace and was like, fuck, what is this? And like... And I bought it and I wanted to love it because all the people that, you know, that whose tastes I really respect and have influenced me and turned me on to new music were always going, yeah, go check out Grace. And, and I've gone back to it and I just, it doesn't do what it does for everyone else to me and I don't get it. Last Goodbye does. I think it's wonderful.
Yeah.
But the rest of the record.
But the rest of it.
Like... Hallelujah, it's all right, but I prefer the John Cale version.
Oh, thank goodness you didn't say the other one. I would have had to question this entire interview.
I like Tim Buckley.
Oh, yes.
You know, I'm all over that, but yeah.
But isn't that good? You're sticking to your guns, though, Stu. Do you know what I mean? You didn't get swayed into thinking, oh, I better pretend to everyone that I love this album. I'm actually like, oh, I don't love this album.
I'm always more conscious of not being like indie wanker, just going like, oh yeah, well everyone loves that. Like, no, I prefer the B side. Like, because I'm not that guy. I'm really not. But I just wish I got the magic that everybody else gets for Jeff Buckley, and it just. I just think
it could still happen. You never know. You might have that day where you sit down and decide to listen to it and suddenly it's magic.
I hope so. Because I do feel like I'm missing out, because generally when people that love Jeff Buckley mention his name, they literally light up and they get so impassioned about his voice, his music, and, you know, the whole thing's... I mean, there was rumours, wasn't there, that there was going to be a film made?
Yeah, with...
Brad Pitt.
Oh, I thought it was James Franco.
Brad Pitt's a huge fan.
Oh, like, and then wasn't there Robert Pattinson at one point? I feel like many people have talked about playing Jeff Buckley.
Any super handsome Hollywood actor's, you know, probably gonna
slight bit of Franco, floppy hair.
Franco could do that, I reckon.
Yes, because he looks like him. Well, I don't know what happened with that, because I also was thinking that was going to happen. And then I do remember reading something about R. Pats and that as well, but R. Pats. Who actually, true story, since we're here, whoa, took me to my sixth form leavers ball.
Shut up.
True story. Yeah.
Right. Firstly, R. Pats. I've never heard that.
Have you not?
No, but I love that. So.
I'm suddenly very embarrassed.
He took you to was it your leavers, school leavers party?
So I was at school with his sister, Lizzie Pattinson. And it's actually quite sad.
L. Pats?
E. Pats and her sister V. Pats. No, basically, I had... No men were attracted to me, so I had no... I had no one to date me to my ball.
You can't say that while sitting under the stairs. That's so fucking tragic, Jess. No one will take me to the ball. I'm hiding under the stairs.
No one loves me. No, basically, I didn't have a date at the time.
Sure.
So Lizzie was like, why don't we just... Rob can come with you. And he was, I think, 14 at the time. And obviously ludicrously beautiful, which he is. I actually dug out the photos a while ago because no one believes me. It is absolutely true. And I don't know where they are. I must have dug them out. And I think I've left them in my old flat somewhere. And, you know, conveniently, they're now in the bin somewhere. But I would love to put them on social media and prove this hilarious point when my hair was in these kind of tiny little balls on the top of my head. I don't know what was going on.
Was that the kind of the Bjork thing?
I think so, Stu. I'm not sure. I just remember going to a hairdresser and saying, it's my ball, make me look pretty. And that's what I ended up with. Sort of, lots of Bjork balls on the top of my head. As I sat next to R. Pat. Ridiculous.
Oh, amazing. I mean, that's a great way to start the podcast. How does Rhythm Is a Dancer start?
Do, 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 do. It's all that.
It's that big and then it's symphony rhythm. Sound, isn't it?
Yeah, and it goes on for so long that I feel like it calls everyone to the dance floor. It's it's all synth. It's so long. I played it the other day. I was like, this intro is so, so long.
Yeah.
And then there's all the like sneaky little rhythm, but they're not in properly. And then suddenly it's like, do, 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 and it's proper in. Forget that people thankfully can't see me. Doing that
Rhyming
dance.
Under the stairs, loving it. Okay, I'm going to take you back for track two, Jess, and I'm going to ask you please to tell me the first song that you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you, please.
Yes. I have chosen As the World Falls Down from The Labyrinth by David Bowie. I mean, wow. I was trying to work out what the emotion, like what that impact was, and I think it was yearning.
For what?
And not necessarily that lust yearning, but it's something about that scene in that ballroom where he's just looking at her and he can't get her and he wants her. And I don't know, there was so much going on for me in terms of my dad was killed when I was two, and that kind of feeling of wanting and yearning so badly to have that person around in my life. Something about that struck a chord every time I watched that film, and my brother and I watched that film all the time.
Yeah.
It's just the best film. So something about that scene, it used to just hit me, and I would cry, and I was tiny. You know, I was young when that, I mean, I don't think I watched it when it very first came out, but I was probably about, you know, seven or eight when I, and it was a lot, it was huge emotions. And I'm sure, of course, like a lot of people, there was also some kind of lusting over David Bowie and that bizarre outfit that everyone seemed to find attractive. It was, yeah, it's a
quite
beautiful
snug
song.
Wasn't it?
Yes, it was very snug, very confusing outfit, I think,
yeah,
for a lot of people.
Definitely.
But it did something, Stu. I don't know what that something was, but it did something.
I only realised how snug it was maybe about 2 years ago. And I'm old enough to have gone to the cinema to watch Labyrinth.
Oh, wow.
And just being blown away. And I've got to be honest, probably didn't know that much about David Bowie then either. I was just like, oh, it's just Jim Henson's doing some more crazy shit. I'm all over this.
Puppets.
And you watch it now, and it's like, how bizarre does Bowie look in that? Like, the whole setup, he's just crackers and wonderful. So where was home then? Jess?
Home was Earlsfield in southwest London, in a nice house, which my mum still lives in. I went to Wimbledon High School, so I had a sort of lot of very, very rich friends that we didn't have that money. So I was sort of hanging out in houses that had, you know, giant plasma screen TVs and MTV and all sorts of things on that we didn't have at home. But, you know, mum's amazing. She, single mum, brought us up, made sure that we both went to really good schools and provided everything she possibly could. But yeah, southwest London, born and raised. There's a bit in Love Actually where I think Martine McCutcheon says she's from Wandsworth, not the good bit. And that's where I was from.
That's a good impression there, by the way.
Thanks very much. I love Martine. So it's funny going home now because it's exactly the same as it was. Nothing's changed.
Was you aware that, you know, you were surrounded by people that kind of were probably more privileged and you know, had much wealthier lifestyles than you? And how did that make you feel?
That's a really good question. Yes, I was very aware of it. I think I've spent a lot of my childhood trying to fit in some way. And I think it started before being aware of, you know, the privilege lives that my friends were leading. It goes back to, you know, not having a dad growing up was very, I remember being, I think, six and doing a Father's Day card thing at school and sort of saying, hi, sorry, I don't have a dad, and everyone else laughing, which of course I'm sure they wouldn't even do that today, but yeah. Back then there was nothing in place at all, you know, so we did, both my brother and I, grow up in trauma and grief. And those are huge things for children to try and grasp. And of course, they don't understand that you don't at that age. It feels like you've just been left or abandoned. So I think a lot of my childhood was me trying to find that collective, that, you know, group that I belonged in. And so, yeah, that was another thing that made me an outsider when I was at school, was the fact that, you know, I didn't have what car did everyone have? Like a Golf or something cool. Is that cool? I don't know.
I think it was, yeah.
I can't remember. I had the car from Reggie Yates's film Pirates, the beaten up Peugeot 205, which cost me, I think, like £600. It was definitely belonged on a scrap heap.
First cars are meant to be shit.
I think so too. Honestly, you wouldn't believe it. It was like, what's that show? Where, Sweet 16 thing, where they used to get given those SUVs.
Yeah.
I mean, this is what I was dealing with, really, Stu.
Yeah.
It was bonkers. But it also was amazing because I'd end up at parties, you know, in properties that were owned by property developers selling to, like, Robbie Williams. And I'm thinking, what on earth am I doing here? But I definitely noticed that, you know, there was an element of people, friends of mine, potentially bailing on me because they might have got a better offer. That was a feeling that I felt quite often at school, and I think that's because I couldn't offer, you know, the fun things that other people could, whether it was hanging out with whichever band it was at the time, or, you know, fancy parties with bell towers. Don't know if they had bell towers, but
so is, I mean, you mentioned you know, just touching on what you said there, what is, I mean, it kind of sort of smacks of sort of almost like imposter syndrome. And how do you deal with that? And do you ever deal with that now?
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I had huge imposter syndrome when you asked me to do this.
Shut up.
I did. I sat and I had to give myself a strong talking to, Stu.
Okay.
Because I thought, hang on a minute. You know, I'm successful. I know what I'm doing. You know. And also it's about music. And like you say, it's about having a nice chat with a mate. And,
of course it is.
Yeah, imposter syndrome for sure. I think all the things that I'm also training at the moment to be a psychotherapist. So I'm fascinated by all this. And actually looking back through music has been really interesting. The things, you know, hearing my brother playing goth music angrily through the wall that I shared whilst playing Backstreet Boys was...
that's a mashup, isn't it?
My poor mother. She's like, what's going on? That's really interesting because I think, you know, back then my brother was trying to let out the emotions that he had through music and his was angry. I'm angry about all this stuff. Whereas mine, I think, was very much a, please, someone love me. and I think when you've gone through trauma and you are a sponge to all those emotions around you and there's nothing in place. So we didn't talk about it. You know, we didn't talk about the fact that dad was dead and that made me different and all of those things. And I had a huge amount of emotion, complicated, deep, complex emotion. That if I demonstrated it or expressed it, was kind of gaslit, really. It was squashed. It was, oh, you're being hysterical, you're being dramatic, you're being too much. So that would lead to shape-shifting and imposter syndrome and all sorts of other things and fawning and trying to be less of who I was, shrink away, because I'm too much for people. So if I shape-shift and if I people-please and I entertain and I do those things, not only can I show those emotions through those roles, they're acceptable in those roles, but also I'm liked. And I think that was the main thing for me, was wanting to be liked, needing to be liked, and probably still is, and it's probably 100% the reason I'm an actor, but I'm sure it's the reason most actors are actors, to be fair.
God, growing up's tough, isn't it, at the best of times.
Oof, it is, Jim.
Oh dear,
it is.
Okay, well, let's stay in the formative years, Jess, and I'm going to ask you please to tell me the song that reminds you of your time at school, please.
I feel like every answer I have for these is like, yeah, but also, Stu, there's also this.
Oh, you're allowed honourable mentions, mate. That's fine.
Honourable mentions. Mm. Well, it's complicated, isn't it? Because you kind of got the younger years of school.
Yeah.
And the first song that I thought of hilariously was I Wanna Sex You Up.
TikTok, because you won't stop.
Yeah, because that played at my disco when I was like 10. I just younger. Must have been like 6 or 7.
Oh, fuck me, Jess. I was literally hearing that in clubs. That's how old I am.
Oh, I wish I was hearing that in clubs. I just remember being completely confused, hearing it in the like gym hall. why is this playing? But yeah, so I went through all of the teeny bopper years, Stu. And actually, looking back on it, originally when I was going to, you know, thinking about these songs to talk to you about, I was a bit embarrassed about the whole Backstreet Boys era, Take That, Backstreet Boys era, M&A, and all the other ones. But actually, like I said, it was that time of trying to fit in and be with people in a collective. And the sort of teeny boppers, I remember the rivalry between the boys owners and the BSBs, the Backstreet Boys fans. And it was real, and yeah. It was tribal. And I think after the tribal Backstreet
Boys. Featuring some sort of turf war going on in Wimbledon.
Oh, but there were. There used to be fights breaking out in Wimbledon Station, Stu, like for real, between the local girls' schools. I'm not even kidding. And it was hilarious because there were two slightly rougher girls' schools and they would get in these massive fights and you'd just see these like posh Wimbledon High girls like running through them trying to get their trains out to like wherever they lived, Surrey, with their pools.
Amazing.
But yeah, so I went through all of the teeny bopper fan era, but also was massively into Oasis. And that is what I've chosen, Wonderwall, because I managed to get away with wearing Adidas Campus at school for like 5 years by claiming I had a knee injury instead of like a nice shoe that you were supposed to wear. Because I was like, no, I'm supporting Oasis wearing Adidas shoes. And I used to sit in Wandsworth Common with my dog and local friends and we'd hang out in this tree. So bonkers. And we were just obsessed with Oasis, absolutely obsessed. And that's a real time. Actually, one of those, one of the people I used to hang out with is now Public Service Broadcasting, the band. Like, he's John in Public, which is just so bonkers. I didn't realise until I saw them live at Glastonbury and was like, hang on a minute. He looks a bit familiar.
Oh, really?
Weird. Yeah. And they were cool. They were older than me. They were cooler than I was. And they were in a band. And, you know, I loved hanging out with them. And it was all we talk about, Oasis, if you heard the new song. So there was all that going on. But also, I am a garage girl. You know, that's my era. Through and through. And I very nearly chose a garage song for pretty much every one of these.
Okay. Which one was in the running?
Oh, no, they were all in the running. I was just listening to Crazy Love. So probably that. I mean, they're all everything.
Yeah.
It was such an era. Watching Pirates, again, to go back to Reggie Yates's film, it was so fun. The whole audience was, you know, people who were around then. And the Nokia 3310 rang in the film and everyone was like, whoa, whoa. And yeah, I'm just really proud to have grown up in that time, actually. So that would have been more my late teen years when we were before that. Sneaking out at 14 to go to Equinox in Leicester Square. Terrible.
But both of them scenes, you know, whether that be, you know, what the press called Britpop, you know, and talking about, you know, the Blur's, Oasis, Pulp, Suede, etc. Like, so British. And then you look at Garage and, I mean, that doesn't get any more, that screams London to me. It sounds like London.
And it's a London thing.
It is a London thing. And, quite, you know, and it is. And, yeah, I just think, I mean, what was you, because, you know, when I speak to guests on here, when they kind of find that point where, you know, when you start to get into your sort of, you know, 14, 15, et cetera, and you start to find your tribe and you realise then that maybe you don't want to be hanging around with that. Like, you don't want to be trying to pretend you're into that, to be with that person, because these people like the stuff that I like. And I think, you know, when them sort of times start to sort of present themselves, I think that's when you start to, I don't know, certainly the case for me, start to kind of find out a little bit more about who you are, who you want to be. With that in mind, things like Oasis or Garage, did that feel almost... elements of sort of punk to that? Did that feel kind of anti-establishment? And
yeah, do you know what it did? I think Oasis, well, actually both of them, yeah. I was going to say Oasis, definitely. I almost felt like at the time that Blur was more kind of, I don't know, it was nicer. It was a bit too nice. And it's not at all, but it sort of felt a bit flowery for me. Whereas no, the kind of Oasis was, yeah, it did. It felt like, and the lyrics, you know, everything about it was like, we're done with this, actually. We're going to stand up and roar about it. And definitely Garage. Garage felt like, if you don't know about Garage, like, get out of my face. You know, we were so, it was Garage guns. I obviously see those on the podcast, but I'm doing them now for you. I think it was very punky.
Yeah.
that's really cool to think of it that way, actually. Because, of course, when you're in it, you're not really... It's just happening around you, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was... I mean, what Garage did for music, in my opinion, is epic.
Yeah.
Absolutely epic. And listening... It was listening to... I went to the Q&A for that Pirates film, and it was so interesting listening to the guys who played the roles. You know, these sort of 20-somethings, brilliant performances from all three of them. And they were all just saying, oh, we're so jealous that we didn't grow up in that time.
Yeah.
And I am really proud. I always talk about how proud I am to be a Londoner, but how proud I am that I grew up in those Garage days. And I do think there was an element of, rising up, and which led to even more rising up, really. It wasn't very well said, but you know what I mean.
Did you know what you wanted to be when you was at school?
Yes, I did. So my dad was an actor, and I often question whether I truly wanted to be an actor or whether it was what I thought I should be because I was trying to follow in my dad's footsteps. Mm-hmm. And I think there's an element of both. I wanted to be an actor from a very, very tiny age, and was laughed at actually by the careers woman in my school when I said I was thinking of going to drama school, not to university. It was very much, she went, Oxbridge or, other great universities, and that was that. And you did law or medicine. That was kind of it. And this woman laughed at me. So I did. I went to university in the end because I thought panic. But no, definitely, I did all the school plays. I did it all. And it was such a wonderful outlet for me. And that's why I get so...
Did you like the attention?
Yeah, definitely.
Was you a show-off?
I think I was a show-off, but yeah, I felt seen, Stu. And I think that's when you're a little girl who, like I said, is full of stuff that she doesn't understand, these big emotions that, like, it hurts today. It actually hurts. I think you try and show that any way you can with the hope that then someone... I used to say, I said it today in the podcast, my most used phrase, I think, in my whole life has been, my dad was killed when I was two. And it's a very specific sentence. I don't say my dad died. I say my dad was killed. And in some ways, he was killed, but in some ways that's more dramatic. And I think the more dramatic I was, it was because I was trying so hard for someone to turn around and effectively give me a hug and say, oof, you have been through some stuff.
Yeah.
I'm really sorry that you've been through that. And I never got that. Not until I was an adult and, going through therapy, did I ever get that validation of the pain that I was experiencing.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you for track 4, just to tell me the first song that you remember buying from a record shop, please.
Yeah, which links quite nicely into that chat, doesn't it? I think this is hilarious. This is my first song that I bought in a record store. And I remember going into R Price and buying it with my nanny at the time, who was looking after me. It's Shakespeare's Sister and Stay.
Fuck me. If there weren't enough drama in Jeff Buckley, you're going to throw in Shakespeare's Sister.
Oh, what a song. And do you know what, Stu? It wasn't the, the beautiful Marcella bit at the beginning. It was that, you better hope and pray.
Yeah.
It's that meaty, dark, wow.
I have tried to get her on the podcast day one. Like, Siobhan Fahey was like, I'm old enough that she was my crush in Bananarama.
Oh, yeah.
And then all of a sudden, she turns up in a new band named after a Smith song. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm on board. And because they put a record out last year, Shakespeare's Sister, and toured again.
They?
Yeah.
I did not know this.
Yeah. I mean,
wow.
Aside from the kind of gnarly Siobhan voice, Marcella Detroit's voice is fucking amazing, isn't it?
It's unbelievable. Yeah. It's absolutely, actually just sitting here thinking about it has given me goosebumps. So there we go. Like, literally got goosebumps.
She does a little kind of, almost like a scream at the end when all the drama's going, the strings are going, and
everything's going.
Literally, I think, because in the video, I think, are they like, they're fighting over the body, aren't they, that's in the hospital bed?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. I haven't actually watched that video in years, but as you've said that, that's absolutely what's come back. Yeah.
And it's just a bit where... Marcella's voice just soars, and it's like so high as well. It's like, wow, I've just given myself goosebumps. There you go, saying that.
Great song.
Not everyone gets goosebumps, Jess. Did you know that?
Is that Is that scientifically true, Stu?
Not everybody gets them.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know if you don't get them if you're dead inside. Like, I don't know. emotionally void. But I know that not everybody gets goosebumps.
Oh. And,
what a weird little
That's
thing
sad.
To
I'm
not
sad
ever
they don't
experience.
Get to experience that moment of like, whoa.
And did you know that there's musicians, I've mentioned this before, so if people have heard me mention this on another episode, I do apologise, but it fascinates me, that there's technology used now, which is kind of, I don't know what frequencies in music and things, that induces goosebumps.
I feel like that's Adele's voice, though.
Right.
Did I read an article about that? No,
I'm not
genuinely.
Sure.
there's something about the pitch, the tone of her vibrato that scientifically taps into that exact thing that you're talking about.
Wow.
Which makes everyone emotional.
That's crazy. Like, yeah. There's definitely, I think on one of the kind of probably less successful Michael Jackson later albums, he was obsessed with that technology. And there's lots of production stuff thrown in there, which apparently, yeah, brings on goosebumps. Yeah, how strange.
It's bonkers, isn't it? Goosebump-inducing music.
That was a great little voice over there.
For that,
yeah, it really
sure
was, wasn't it?
Oh, dear.
I'm going to use that and then just put off the beaten track afterwards.
Oh, God.
Right. So tell me about, I want to sort of just hang on to a chat about record shops at the moment. We've done a little shout out for our price there. but as you got older, and did record shops ever become, you know, somewhere that you'd kind of go and frequent? Were they, you know, and even nowadays, you know, if you walk past a rough trade, you go in and have a look. Like, what's your relationship with the record shop?
In school, one of my best friends lived in Putney, and there was the R Price on the high street there, and that was what we did, you know, on a weekend. And they had those great listening stations, didn't they, that you could go and plonk on anything and just sit there and like vibe out to it. So we were in there most weekends. My pocket money all went on pocket money. I had a job by then, but my money, it's my 50p from my mum, went on records.
Yeah.
It all did. Well, CDs.
Yeah.
And actually, Katie had a mini disc player, which I did not have. But
someone was doing all right.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, I know. I think she had all of those things, actually. And then, at uni, the HMV in Norwich was always the place to be, actually, weirdly. Big baggy jeans and hanging out in the rock area. Loved it. But again, spent
so
all
did
my
you
money
find there. Yourself in Norwich around... So what was happening then? New metal?
Yeah. I suppose drum and bass from London as well. Not just specifically from London, but I kind of was into that in London. Mm-hmm. So it was drum and bass. Gosh, the rock nights at UEA. Sweaty, baggy jeans.
What was happening then? Limp Bizkit, all of that stuff.
Limp Bizkit, Linkin Park.
Deftones.
System of a Down.
Yeah.
I actually put Chop Suey on earlier and just was like, oh, gosh, it's so good. So good. Everyone had piercings at my uni. It was really, it was such a great place to be. Because there was, you know, there was the indie night. There was the cheesy night, which I never went to. Thank you very much. There was the rock night. There was it was great. And because it was UEA, it's the only place to play in East Anglia, really, for big bands to come and play. So we just got everyone. It was so cool.
Who'd you get? Who'd you see?
Well, I was about to say someone that we shouldn't talk about for very horrible reasons.
Okay.
We won't talk about them. Somebody very big. Air came and played at UEA. That's weird and amazing. Yeah. Wheatus, hilarious at the time. Loved a bit of Wheatus. I love that. I was like, big, amazing band.
Yeah.
Wheatus.
Oh, they all come to UEA. Wheatus.
Who else came? Alkaline Trio. I loved them. Who else did I interview? Because I used to do the photography for the paper and interview them sometimes bands as well. I'm trying to think who I met. Oh, Snow Patrol. That was nice. Not really very epic rock music, but still lovely. A Shed 7.
Nice.
I had tea with, Stu.
Really?
Because my first year halls were right opposite where the tour buses would stop. And we just invited Shed 7 in for tea one night.
I've had Rick on here. He's a really nice fella.
I mean, they were lovely.
Yeah.
Absolutely lovely. Feeder. Who else was around at the time? Gosh, it was just, there was so much going on.
And so what you was trying, was you sort of interested in getting involved in music at that point then by sort of photography and interviewing bands and stuff? Was that something that was sort of, you know, a consideration?
I would have loved to have been, you know, famous in a band.
Wouldn't we?
Yeah, that would have been cool. I was in a band, Stu.
Let's talk about that. Tell me all about your band, Jess.
Stu, they had a really cool name.
Okay, go on.
It's really not cool. We were called Stonosaurus.
Fucking hell.
Oh, my God. It was a time. We were doing kind of, we always described it as like piss rip stoner hip hop.
Right.
It was so bad, but it was so good. My friend Mike and John, Mike and John would make up these incredibly silly but very funny lyrics. And then I would sort of wail in the background like Fergie from the Black Eyed Peas. And it was a time, but we got really successful in Norwich. Oh, gosh. And actually ended up going on tour with Goldie Looking Chain.
Wow.
Thank you very much. Yep.
I mean, that's pretty amazing.
Guns don't kill people.
Really fucking amazing considering you was called Stonosaurus.
I won't even repeat some of the lyrics because actually now 2021 extremely inappropriate and not nice actually.
Okay.
But at the time it was good but I did I hang out with a lot of music journalist wannabes who are now actually music journalists, and yeah, that would have been a really cool path. And I loved photography, but it still wasn't quite what was, I suppose, floating my boat.
Yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
So at uni and choosing to go to uni and not drama school, was acting kind of on the back burner for a bit?
Well, I did English and drama, so I still was doing drama. There was a lot of writing going on. I wasn't very happy in my first year at university. I've been quite public with people who follow me and things with regards to a horrible thing that happened to me in my first year, unfortunately. And it made me sort of question whether I could stay at uni. But I did stay. But at the time I was thinking I better apply for drama schools. Get me out of here. And I'm pleased I did stay because it made me who I am. And I think I was a big believer that to be a great actor, you need life experience. And I still believe that. And I knew that being at university would give me that life experience and access to so many people from all walks of life and all of those wonderful things that enhance you as a person and as an actor. But as soon as I finished university, in my last year of university, I was applying for drama schools to go and do a postgrad. And actually, the year I went to university, all London drama schools changed their course to a degree course just to completely mess up my plan.
Oh, dear.
So selfish. So my plan had always been 3 years at university and then a year or 2 years at drama school.
Yeah.
But that was not to be. Had to sort of change direction a bit.
Which was your choice for clubbing? Did you actually decide to settle on one, or have we not gone there yet?
We haven't gone there yet.
Are we going for the greatest works of Stonosaurus? Or?
Yeah, we're going for Why Don't You Give Me Another Blowback. I believe that was a classic Stonosaurus track.
Oh, incredible.
Thinking about Chop Suey, actually, I feel like I should actually choose that because I have chosen, or I told you I chose, A Little Bit of Luck by DJ Luck and MC Neat because those clubbing days towards the end of school were so awesome. And, you know, that holiday that everyone goes on when they finish school and they end up on a Greek island dancing at Saloon 69 or whatever it's called. True story. Those days were great. So I did choose that. But actually thinking about those rock nights, those were the clubbing nights for me at university.
Yeah.
You know, screaming out the epic lyrics and thrashing your hair around and sweat flying. So I think actually I'm going to switch it to System and Chop Suey.
I'd also really like to know what you were screaming whilst you were singing along to Chop Suey, because I have not got a fucking clue what he's saying.
I don't think you trust in my self-righteous suicide.
No, not that bit. You know I'm not talking about that bit.
No idea. You want to be. Isn't that, that's one of those things.
That's that bit.
You want to do. Yeah, no idea, Stu, but good point.
Oh, wonderful. The reason being, I've played that in my club for probably the last 30 years and or 20 years. And do you know what? I saw something advertised yesterday that freaked me out. The Libertines have announced a tour to celebrate the 20th anniversary of their first album. And it's like, there's no way the Libertines was 20 years ago.
Oh.
How terrifying is that?
That's made a little bit of sick come up. 20 years.
I know. Crazy.
I'm still that person that genuinely believes that the 90s was like 10 years ago, though.
Yeah.
That's it.
I know.
I can't get past that.
Mm. Yeah, it's weird. Like when, I mean, I've got my club and people, I ID people sometimes and I just think, holy shit. Like, that was like 2 years ago when you was born. 19 years ago. That makes no sense. I was DJing a little while ago and this girl come up to me when I was DJing and she was like, are you Stu Whiffin? I was like, yes. And I thought, still got it. And she went, you went to school with my mum. She said to say hello. And I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. That was very grounding.
My ex-boyfriend was 8 years younger than me. And I was dating him when he was still at university. And I went to meet him one day and he looked really a bit hungover. I said, are you all right, babe? What's going on? He said, oh, yeah, just feeling a bit rough. Went out last night. I said, oh, was it a good night? He said, yeah, it was a retro night. I said, oh, cool. What was that like? You know, 70s, 80s? He's like, no, 90s. And I never, ever say that again, ever. Yeah. My era is not a retro era. How dare you?
Yeah, God.
That made me feel a bit sick.
Okay. Let's take you home. Favourite song from an artist from your home county, please, Jess.
I mean, this is so difficult being from London.
Yeah.
Because I've got, what, Kate Bush, Kinks.
Bowie.
Police, Bowie.
Clash.
Literally so many amazing bands. I'm laughing because I feel like I chose a fairly cheesy option. Okay. But there's a reason behind it. I've gone for Adele, Hometown Glory, but the high contrast remix of it, which I love, because it incorporates a bit, you know, the drum and bass with it all. But I was walking through the beginning of lockdown, I suppose, kind of coming full circle for what we're talking about. I decided I needed to go and walk through my hometown and see it in lockdown. I needed to see it with my own eyes because I couldn't really believe what, you know, people were talking about. Oh, it's empty, it's empty. And I took myself on this epic walk. I went, you know, all the way down to London Bridge, South Bank, Trafalgar Square, Soho, everywhere. And I bet I must have seen like three people. And I remember Adele's, this song came on, Hometown Glory, which I love the original anyway. And I just cried, Stu. It was just, it was so emotional looking around and like, where are the people? Where are my people? And the National Theatre was taped up and, you know, the benches were all taped up. It was so strange. And that, I suppose, the lyrics of this song are amazing anyway.
Yeah.
And they always make me think, you know, that is an absolutely accurate depiction of how London makes me feel. And yeah, so that's why I chose that one.
Have you heard People's Faces by Kay Tempest?
Yes.
That's my walking around London.
Yes. Oh, excellent.
That's my little headphone one, which gets my bottom lip trembling a little bit when I walk through London. Always go for that track.
I nearly went actually for Kano, T-shirt, Weather and the Manor, my friend.
Oh, wonderful.
I think the storytelling, I think Kano in general, wow. Wow. For me, storytelling is so important, I think, as we can tell from Shakespeare's Sister Stay. But that's the story he tells through that song is just mind-blowingly good. And that always makes me think, yeah, London.
So as an actor, I'm not an actor, but I do this all the fucking time. So if I'm on the train, if I get off the train and I'm walking to the tube and my headphones on, I'm in a music video. Do you do that?
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely. I'm in that Verve video all the time.
Always.
Bit of Sweet Symphony, swinging my arms around, always.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a ridiculous thing to kind of sort of, you know, and I've questioned myself a few times, like just kind of looking back at myself in like the reflection in the tube or whatever. And it's a bit self-indulgent and a bit crackers, but it feels kind of nice. So I just think, oh, do you know what? Just go with it. Who cares? Like,
I know that feeling of, realizing that I remember sort of sitting on the tube reading a book and thinking that people were watching me reading a book.
Yeah.
And being like, Jess, come on. No one is thinking about you reading your book. They might look at the front cover and be like, oh, what's she reading? And that's when I realized I was.
Is that girl from Stonosaurus?
Is she the one that was like Fergie from the Black Eyed Peas? But yeah, I was very self-aware actually in terms of thinking, oh God, everyone's looking at me. I'm doing something wrong. And then I worked through that and I don't think like that anymore. But yeah, of course, like great song comes on, you know, catch yourself in a shop window. I love that. I'm like, yeah, I'm in a TLC music video. Don't talk to me right now.
Do you like to dance?
I love to dance. Do you know what? This is actually quite sad. I went to All Points East this year and danced non-stop to Marianne Hobbs's All Queen stage. Actually, shout out to Marianne Hobbs, because I would not have got through lockdown at all without Six Music.
You and me both, mate.
Oh, Sean Keaveney. Oh, I mean, honestly, like they become like friends, don't they? And everyone who listens to the show, if you tweet and then they message you, it's like there's such a nice community. Community again.
Yeah.
I keep talking about that. But yeah, so I danced like an absolute unleashed feral creature at All Points East. But other than that, I have hardly danced this year, except from my kitchen, which is a frequent daily occurrence.
Yeah.
But yeah, gosh, I miss those nights of, you know, unbridled joy. I don't know what I was going to say.
Well, I guess this is the point where you can be influencer, taste maker, and introduce someone to something. Because for the last track, Jess, I'm going to ask you, please, to tell me a song that you think many people may not know that you would like them to hear.
Yeah, so I've chosen Coming Home by City and Colour. A lot of people will know, obviously, Alexis on Fire. And Dallas Green is in Alexis on Fire, and this is his solo stuff. And he's been doing it for years. But his voice is just that thing where, keep having to clear my throat, sorry, where it's like you get a snapshot into someone's soul, and there's nothing masking anything. It's just pure, I'm giving you my gut.
Yeah.
And as an actor, that's what I pride myself on. I'm so not bothered about what I look like, what gesture I'm doing, none of that. I just want to give you the meat of it. And I think what Dallas does is just stunning. I've taken several friends to see him live. In fact, the last gig I went to before lockdown was City in Colour at the Palladium. And it was a sit-down one. And it was, I looked to my friend, I went with a comedian friend of mine and looked to my right, and she'd never seen him before, and she was just crying her eyes out. So I'm sure lots of musos out there have heard of City in Colour.
Yeah.
But for those who maybe might have heard of Alexis on Fire but haven't thought that someone in Alexis on Fire could not be going, "Rah," yeah, and is actually singing stunningly, that song is amazing. Beautiful. And it's the first one that I heard of his that made me go, "Whoa, I love this guy."
Well, Jess, we put together a Spotify playlist to accompany the podcast. So
good. My epic 70s song choice playlist.
So people will get to hear that, and we'll throw on some other songs that we've spoke about. Obviously, All Your Choices, and so as we fast approach Christmas, I'm going to ask you what you've got. What you're looking forward to from 2022 personally, and what's going to be happening professionally?
Wow. I think personally, I hope that I get to have a holiday. I haven't had a holiday in 2 years now, which I'm both very grateful for the fact that I've been working nonstop. That's amazing. But also, I'm very tired. So I hope travel is back in my life. And I hope all the weddings that have been postponed, Corona postponer, that we can actually get to do them next year. That would be nice because dancing will be involved.
Yeah.
And professionally, there'll be a radio play coming out, I think probably February, probably. I'm not sure how long it takes for those things to come out. We're recording in the next week and the week after, which is exciting. And then who knows, Stu? There'll be lots more film and TV voice stuff that I'm doing. Watch this space.
And if people want to keep up to speed on all of your creative output, where's the best place to keep up to speed with you?
Twitter, probably, yeah. I'm Jess Carroll Acts.
Wonderful. Well, if it's all right with you, I'll tag you in this when we shout about this so people can go and find it. Jess, it's been an absolute delight talking records with you.
Same, Stu. I've loved it.
Oh, wonderful. Jess, thank you so much, mate.
Thanks for having me.
There you go. What a lovely natter that was. Oh, Jess was great. Really enjoyed that. Laughed lots. As I mentioned at the beginning, like when you've got the guests where they just feel relaxed and they're smiling and they're laughing, that's your perfect guest. That's when you know you're having fun and you're going to have a good chat. And that's exactly what we got. excuse me. There we go. Being a bit Bob Fleming there. So thanks to Jess. Thanks to you lot for listening. If you'd like to help the podcast in any way, shape or form, there's loads of ways you can do it. Give it a share if you see it on the socials. We're on all the usual places. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Just click subscribe. That's good. If you want to review it on any of them platforms, give us a little review, little couple of stars or whatever. Oh, five would be nice. And if you'd like to support it and get access to more content, then I have a Patreon, which is like a social media thing where basically you pay 79p a month and you get loads of video episodes. You can watch this episode over on Patreon, and you get loads of radio shows and episodes that have never been released to the public. And there's probably a couple of hundred of those in the back catalogue as well. So for 79p a month, yeah, you get to support the podcast and get access to loads of other stuff that's never been released to the general public. Right. I think I'm done. Stay beautiful, lovely people, and I'll see you next time. Much love. Bye-bye.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.